lands, not as graceful as one aims. So say brace for the things you don't know.
All right. Well, you're on. I can hear you. You can hear me. Hey, everybody. You are listening to Man v. Mob Radio. I'm your host, Patrick Clerkin, and this is 91.5 FM WMFO Medford Tufts Freeform Radio. And I can never set up everything. I swear I have to have like four arms to be able to do everything at once. I still need to set up the Facebook stream. But you can hear us, and that's good, and we're live on the air. So... hi, everybody. This is my in-studio guest, Ryan. It's a different Ryan than the one that I usually have on, but he's done the...
okay.
I usually no, have my other, playing, friend, Ryan. My other friend, Ryan.
I know my place, which is apparently Ryan number two, Ryan B. Like, it's all good.
Well, actually, I think you were on the podcast before the other Ryan was, have that distinguished position.
My claim.
And you have the like 3.5 hour long... what was it? Movies and music.
Top 10 movies and top 10 albums.
Yeah, so you have that distinguished position too. Okay, everybody.
A real journey.
Exactly. Yeah, it's been a real journey. So the first thing that I wanted to talk about, and I'm going to kind of swing it over to you, and then I'm going to try to set the other stuff up, is...
sure.
So I'm, for whatever reason, just like obsessed with generations and generational differences, and I kind of wanted to get your opinion on this. So I was recently at the RMV, and I was thinking to myself... What is your opinion of the RMV? What do you think the millennial opinion of the RMV is? Does it hold up to the horror stories that...
I'm going to go with yes. I've only been there once to get my registration. No, that's it. I take that back. I've been there twice.
Okay.
Once was to get my license and registration when I first moved here, which I thought I had like this great strategy. I was going to get there Thursday in the morning... it's going to be a work day. It was not the case. I was there for 3 hours.
I don't think
it was exactly right. I mean, what are you going to do? So that went pretty much as expected, you know, as the stories go.
Mm-hmm.
The second time was when I was renewing my license, which was expiring the next morning because I'm dumb and didn't think about it until I don't know what.
That is a horrible realization.
It was a little panicky. I mean, I wasn't planning on getting pulled over, but just, you know, it's extra stress that you don't want.
Mm-hmm.
I think I got there, I think I realized late in that day. It wasn't even like I had figured out in the morning and planned ahead. It was like at 4:20 I realized that I had to be at the nearest DMV by 5 p.m.
They don't even all do the same thing. They don't all offer the same services, so that is insane.
Right.
Like, sometimes you'll go to one, they go, nah, actually, we don't do that. And you're like, you don't do this fundamental service thing?
Spoiler, that's what happened.
Okay.
So I did get there at, like, 4:45, and they're like, you're SOL, my guy. There's one that's a 15-minute drive. You're welcome to try. I did. By some miracle, I don't know, maybe I had, like, a particularly... I was wearing a nice shirt.
Mm.
I looked presentable. They let me in at, like, 5:05.
Okay.
They were basically like, get the...
No, you can't. You can't swear.
Okay.
Yeah.
Get the F out of here.
Yeah.
We never want to see you again, but like, you have 20 seconds. Scribble your name as quickly as you can and expedite this because we all want to go home. But I somehow got it. I was very thankful, but they allowed me. I did not end up driving illegally.
Well, it was a happy ending. Them.
Right.
That's a good thing.
I was pleasantly shocked.
Wow. Okay.
I almost didn't go, and I was like, I might as well try because it's a 15-minute drive. And when I get pulled over, and I don't know what do you have to get. I think do you have to get your car towed if you don't if you're driving without a license. It's not good. That shit would have haunted me for a couple of years
on
my insurance.
I'm not sure.
Right. So I figured the 15-minute investment was worth saving the headache.
Probably.
And it ended up being true against all odds. So okay, but to your point, I don't think based on those two experiences, I have enough.
Okay, you don't have enough data.
Yeah.
I'm curious if it's more people's experiences, the bureaucracy is terrible, but the personnel has gotten better and the technology,
that's
integration
possible.
Of technology,
it's
maybe?
It's possible, yeah.
Okay, well, that's not... That didn't really add any closure to it.
So. I was going to say, yeah, I am coming hot with some...
I'm going to continue asking that question, but my experience is... The reason why I asked the question is because my take on it is that the DMV or the RMV, I don't even know if there's a difference or if they...
I think it's state.
Okay.
Because where I grew up in New Jersey, it was definitely the DMV.
Okay.
And in my experience, it's always been the RMV in Massachusetts.
Okay. So my experience with it is that it has never really been that terrible. And I think part of that is it's a generational thing where... older people, boomers in particular, just think about bureaucracy and how horrible it was in the past, and they just forever associate that with the institution of the RMV. And for me, I go and I say, well, they have free Wi-Fi, so I can just pass the time on my phone so I'm not really that mad to begin with. And like, yeah, they take a while, but generally the people are pretty friendly. And in my experience, they're not nearly as incompetent as the stories go. I mean, I'm sure there's still some horror stories, and
it's
like dealing with tax forms. Like, you know, I'm sure stuff happens and somebody gets the wrong form and it screws you over sometimes. But anyway, that was my take on it.
Was this very recently? That's why it's been on your mind so much?
Yeah. Well, I had a conversation with a boomer, and they were just saying, like, there's no way. It's horrible. It's always been horrible. And they said, what I said was, you know what? I'll put it out. I'll field the question. I will ask other young people what their experience is at the RMV. Yeah. So anybody listening right now, if you have an experience at the RMV, young, old, whatever, whoever you are, the in-studio line is 855-915-9636. Once again, 855-915-9636. I realize I am terrible at saying that and repeating it, remembering to say it, so I'll try to do it more frequently throughout the program. Other institutions, I'm curious, because I think there's this generational divide throughout, like, views of basically every institution and...
So an interesting one. I don't know how connected you are on the Twitterverse, so to speak.
Not really. I mean, I have one for the podcast, but haven't used it.
So there was a big video going around, I want to say about 3 weeks ago now, of the passenger on the airline. Does this ring any bells?
The guy that got dragged off?
No. So there's... a lady who's reclining all the way back.
Okay.
And the person behind them,
that, I think.
It's the second to last seat. So the person behind
her, I don't even think
could recline at all.
So they're just trapped.
He was retaliating by kind of just smacking the back of her chair.
Oh, like a petulant little
kid.
Like
an actual four-year-old.
Yep.
So the whole thing was like, who's in the wrong in this situation? I think the right answer...
It sounds like one of those situations where it's the worst of humanity all around.
So we brought this up at the lunch table, which, since we're old coworkers, you remember, is basically me at this point, since you've abandoned us.
Oh, yeah.
It's me, one other young person.
As you like to bring up, the abandonment.
The abandonment. And make of that what you will. And like seven other boomers.
Mm-hmm.
So pretty much me and... the other person that's, you know, roughly my age, both agreed that obviously the guy punching the seat was being the bigger petulant child in the situation.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, we both considered it rude to recline in your seats at all.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody over the age of 40 did not share that view at all. They're like, it's a feature. I'm on a plane. That's what the chair does. There's absolutely no reason not to use it. My theory, which I have absolutely no evidence of, is that as the airline industry is trying to maximize the amount of people they could cram on there, probably when those people were our age or were growing up and learning the quote-unquote rules, there probably was more space in between each seat, and reclining wasn't so much of an intrusion on the person behind you.
Sure, and the people were less obese, too. So.
And people were less obese. So I think they, at that point in time, it was ingrained in them that that's, again, perfectly okay. It's something that is available to you, why not? And then as that changed over the years, and I went on my first plane ride, it was probably a lot more crammed, and I realized that doing so would not be kind to everybody around me. So I've just always, I've never reclined. I've just considered it kind of a, not the right move.
I'm glad you brought that up, because that's kind of a point that I'm trying to make, is that the different generations see things through different eyes, and it's not just one being necessarily stupid or ignorant.
Right. I mean, what is it that, like, most of your opinions are decided on by the time you're like 24 years old or something?
Yeah, something like that.
So as the world was so different at that point, they come to those conclusions. At that point, it's hard to change those. It's hard to kind of
you can't really
redefine
it.
Right. You can't really unlearn things. So that's their status quo now.
Mm-hmm. Did you hear about on airplanes how the middle seat, the thing that the people on either side are generally supposed to do is cede the armrest to that person?
That was another thing. Right. That seemed to not, that didn't really register with them. They like hadn't heard it before. They kind of agreed that it made sense, at least.
Because the person in the middle, what do they have?
Right,
they don't have a window or an aisle.
Pure disadvantages.
Yep.
So that's the compensation.
Yeah,
but,
and you're generally wedged between. And by the way, like just because somebody cedes you the armrest, so to speak, doesn't mean their fat roll isn't going over into your, like over the armrest into your
of course,
section, right?
Of course,
so it doesn't mean you're actually getting the armrest just because they're not putting their elbows on it.
Right, that was kind of their view, is if it's available, I'm going to take it. And we're like, well, they're just not using it at that second.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that's the only ray of sunshine that they have.
Wow.
The middle person, I mean. So that one at least, I think, went over a little bit better.
Yeah,
by
I mean,
the
like,
end of floating
actually,
it,
the first time
they
I
understood
heard
that, the logic.
I hadn't really heard about that before. And the first time I heard it, I said, oh, that makes a ton of sense.
Right.
Yeah, I'm going to start doing that. So what do you think is the biggest point of disagreement view-wise with, let's say, millennials and baby boomers, because they're the funnest groups to talk about, but
of course,
X too.
Yeah.
Like X gets left in the dust with these conversations.
Because they straddle the divide there.
Yeah, and so they also are just kind of, I think that the attitude of X is just kind of like, you know what? Just leave us out of it. We're fine. We're doing our own thing a lot of the time.
Sure. I mean, not to just ramp up the politicism, what are we, 12 minutes in?
Yeah.
But free healthcare seems to be pretty divisive,
mm-hmm.
and that's a generous description.
Yeah, that's generous.
It's bordering on like a no-go, mm-hmm. whatsoever. Just a hard line in the sand that for whatever reason they can't come to the same conclusions that I feel like people our age do about that.
Yep, that's a pretty good example.
Right. Part of it is the media brainwashing of anything that seemed remotely socialist during the Cold War, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
That's, you know, just over and over is that all of those policies are anti-American.
Hmm.
They're against everything we stand for. You're supporting people that don't work hard, et cetera, et cetera. Again, this is not my views. I'm just trying to echo,
mm-hmm.
in my experience, what they've been taught to think.
Yeah, there is... Nobody ever wants to admit that the time that they grew up in was heavily propagandized,
yes.
and that they're,
yes.
they're
exactly.
brainwashed.
Exactly.
And there is...
It like, takes a certain amount of self-awareness to...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't think that millennials are brainwash free. Like, I'm sure that we have plenty of things that we've been brainwashed, but also we happen to grow up at a time where the most information that
exactly.
ever before became available. So anything that you could possibly believe, you could be confronted with something that discredits it or disproves it.
There's the downside of that, of course, where
nobody believes anything and everybody's jumping on everything.
That wasn't the point. That's also true.
The fracturing,
but,
basically.
Yeah, but that people with beliefs that I don't think should be reinforced do find the kind of... It's easier to connect with other people in those fringe groups that you would have no way of communicating with before.
Yeah, fringe ideas start to, like the molecules or whatever that start a planet start to...
coagulate.
Yeah, exactly. That is interesting. I was starting to... One of the big ideas that I think needs to... Like, I think kind of this whole capitalist versus communist or capitalist versus socialist thing needs to end, in the sense of people need to realize that, like, no, neither of those has ever existed in entirety. Like, we don't live... We're more capitalist than a lot of places, but a fully capitalist system basically doesn't exist unless it's like, you know, 20 people.
Of course, right.
Same thing with communist.
Right.
Like, it all collapses in these theories.
Well, what's
never
the
actually
point?
Been
it just becomes like a screaming match of umbrella terms.
Yeah. Yeah, and people love to label each other and diminish each other to simple umbrella terms.
Right. And I mean, we were kind of talking about this earlier,
mm-hmm.
not on a program, just, you know, between the two of us, that the way to break that cycle is to destigmatize the words and try to bring it to like individual policies and what they mean. And who cares what you want to label it? Is it something that you believe would make the country and the world a better place? Yes or no?
Yeah.
And then you package that together. You can put a new label on it if you want. I don't really care, because at the end of the day, to me at least, the labels are meaningless. It's just, here's the list of what I'm saying I support. Here's a list of what this belief system, quote unquote, entails.
Mm.
I don't know how to communicate that effectively.
Well, there's a lot of bad faith argumentation. I just feel like people don't know how to actually converse. A simple thing that they everybody assumes they're a good listener, right? Everybody goes, oh, I'm a good listener. And it's like, are you really a good listener?
Yeah, I don't think I've ever heard somebody say I'm a bad listener. So that's, you're not wrong.
One of the attitudes that I think needs to change is just like there's kind of, I understand that this is built into the American story, but this narcissism that surrounds individualism and how, you know, everything that I have, yep, I did it myself.
Yeah.
Because nobody sees the scaffolding surrounding the infinite scaffolding that surrounds what they did, basically. And that can be frustrating because, like, I was just having a conversation with somebody the other day, somebody who was, I would say, in their mid-40s, and they were saying, you know, I don't want to see the system change because I became successful through the system that exists. So then I would not know the new system. And they said, you know, I basically have what I have because I figured it out, and everybody that isn't successful is kind of either being lazy or they didn't really, they didn't save or something like that. And so that view in particular, and this is what I pointed out to him, I was like, well, you know, wouldn't you say that our economy, the big American, the engine of our economy, is incentivizing people who shouldn't be buying things to buy those things and making it as easy as possible through like cheap credit and mass marketing for people to buy and be reckless? Like, for every person who has made profits and done well for themselves, haven't they to some large extent generated those profits off of people's
hyper-consumerism,
right? Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah. Right. So, like, you can knock those people that are not frugal as much as possible, but they lead to the other people that are successful.
Right,
they
right. Have it's a codependency past. Right.
So anyway, I mean, that was a good point with the generational divide with healthcare. What do you think about sex and relationships and kind of dating, all that?
I mean, I think it's increasingly destigmatized in the younger you go. Mm-hmm. I mean, my parents are relatively understanding and aren't super conservative or religious, so they, like, let me reverse it. There are people my age who I know whose parents, like, don't support the idea of them living with somebody until they're married, which is wild. That's a crazy, crazy belief.
I was just talking about someone, with someone about that recently, and yeah, agreed. That is crazy.
Yeah, so, like I said, luckily my parents do not fall under that category at all. Mm-hmm. But, and I don't know if it's the decrease in the religious population or it's better sex ed than there was 30 years ago. I mean, that's a fact. But I'm saying I don't know what the primary factor is. And there's a bunch of other ones that I probably I'm not even considering. Some combination of those, I think, is leading to more acceptance and more casual attitudes.
In adventurousness too, I would imagine, as well.
Yeah.
Like a willingness to date outside of your race, ethnicity, religion, whatever.
Yeah, 100%. Right. Yeah. Right. I think the interconnectivity of people promotes that also. Mm-hmm. There's a certain, I don't know what the right word is, almost like storytelling element of it, where people want to share their experiences more. Mm-hmm. So, like you said, it's an adventurous aspect. So, trying new things, getting outside of your comfort system is interesting to other people. You have something new to share and add to the conversation.
Sure.
Yeah.
What do you think about how younger people, they generally acquire dates through dating apps and things like that? I had heard recently that, you know, anybody that doesn't get a date through face-to-face asking for it doesn't deserve a date. That was a harsh way of putting it, but, like, you know, what do you think about, like, that sentiment or just dating apps in general?
Yeah, so I'm on a couple at the moment. Right. Yeah. Which was very recent for me. I almost feel like I missed the boat to a certain extent. I mean, I didn't, but let me rephrase that. I got on the boat a lot later than other people our age.
Sure.
Because I just started using them, like, I don't know, December. November. Recently.
Yep.
Within the last couple months. I think it's almost to the point where that's the status quo now.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't know if there's any way to go back.
Mm.
It's easy, as you know. It's certainly more superficial. There's a lot of things about it that I thoroughly dislike.
Yep, me too.
But it kind of seems like the natural evolution.
Yeah, I mean, it's more efficient, is it not? Where you, if you want to actually match with somebody,
it's
like
more efficient
shooting...
and it's less efficient. Because you're, you know, unless you're really just cold approaching girls at a bar or something,
mm-hmm.
generally it would be like you met them through some shared activity or some mutual friend.
Yeah.
So you have that initial bridge.
That's true.
That's what ties you together. Mm-hmm. Whereas now you like have, I don't know, a week's worth of like BS conversation that isn't really meaningful. At least I don't consider it to be.
Yeah.
And then half the time you meet them after and you're like, oh, this actually wasn't for me.
Yep.
And I don't know, I've come to that conclusion after 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So that part of it makes it less efficient because you don't have those initial bridges, those initial things in common that would kind of have you weed out these people that you aren't actually compatible with, you know?
That's a good way of looking at it.
Right. So it's positive and positives and negatives. But yeah, to my initial point, I'm not saying like, don't go meet people in the real world.
I think
it's being increased.
Because I don't want to have this like superficial, crappy in-app text conversation
100%.
That's not going anywhere. Can we just like meet up for a date? Clearly you read some things and saw some things on my profile that you like and vice versa. So like,
exactly.
Can we just instantly flip that into a date, please?
Yeah. I mean, as long as you're like choosy and aren't the swipe right on everything guy.
No, I'm not.
Which,
I'm not,
right, I'm not either. I'm very picky.
Yeah.
So then you're right. I'm already hopefully weeding out 98% of the people that I wouldn't want to meet up with anyway.
Mm-hmm.
There should be something in common. If you can carry the most basic of a conversation and like, ask questions back and say like maybe one thing that I found amusing. It's on one hand, that sounds like I have a very low system, but again,
that eliminates like 90% of people right there.
That really, between the fact that I'm not matching or not intending to match with a ton of them right off the bat,
because mm-hmm.
I don't find what they're saying particularly interesting or I don't find them attractive or both, or there's some perceived incompatibility.
Mm-hmm.
The next step is another 80%. So it seems like this is a low bar to clear, but exactly like you said.
Yeah, it's really
for somebody
not.
That has, if we're talking to somebody that's never been on one of these before, that's, you narrowed it way down.
Yeah,
that's a small pool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're wading through a lot of hot garbage.
You are.
I suppose the other thing. Oh, media. Views about the media and media consumption in general between generations. And I'm not going to do the full hour on generational differences.
Yeah, no, that's fine. We kind of touched on this earlier, but the fact that we have more information available,
mm-hmm.
I think and hope means that people our age kind of analyze what they're hearing and what they're reading a little bit more critically.
Mm.
Because, I know plenty of people that just sit and listen to Fox News for 3 hours and it's gospel.
Mm-hmm.
It's the news. What do you mean that they're not reporting facts? That's their attitude.
I mean, there's inherent bias built into the selection of which facts
you
choose to build a narrative. Like, it's not just the person presenting the story saying their biases. It's that what is chosen to present in the first place is news is bias. It's just how valuable you find that bias, I guess. So that's why it's
precisely.
Important to like pull information from all different sources, ultimately. I think that there's plenty of millennials that don't do that, but
I know.
In general, like there's a lot of people that are actually recognizing that that's important.
Right, and hopefully, I think a lower percentage of people than generations above us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the media fragmentation, I personally don't see as, I mean, there are trade-offs to it, like getting... Here's the thing is that people say, well, you know, you're not going to have people agreeing and moving in the same direction. And I say, well, yeah, but I mean, previously when you had like Walter Cronkite or whatever, like one media source or two that everybody consumed, then you had like mass propagandizing of people. And that's what caused them to move in any particular direction.
Yeah.
And the way that I see it today is we can work together, not I hope less by being propagandized and more by individual people's efforts and projects kind of linking together in interesting ways that cause them to collaborate. Like I think that there's an attitude of collaboration now, which is cool. I mean, that's a very buzzy thing, but I'm saying that
it is. Yeah.
You know what I mean though? Like there's the different, I mean, podcasts and entrepreneurial ventures and things
like
that.
They can enabling kind of, people to
yeah.
build whatever they want to. Yeah, of course.
Exactly.
Of course.
And there's the social networking effect and then the technology that interweaves all of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
One of my biggest frustrations, and this goes right into politics too, and this is the biggest generational gap, and it kind of speaks for itself, is technology, right?
Yeah.
Like, the way that I look at it is that older people kind of look at technology like it's this cool little widget that you can just isolate from everything else and put in this nice little box. And it's the thing the kids use to take photos of their food and to talk about BS with each other and be obsessed with this thing in their pocket. And I'm trying to figure out the best way to convey that it has fundamentally changed everything.
Yeah, they don't understand, like, the potency of it, yeah. Is I think what you're trying to say.
Pretty much. And right. And that, like, I mean, let's flip to politics for just a hot sec. Is mm-hmm. Joe Biden, the people that I've talked to or heard say that they like Joe Biden because, you know, they just want somebody who is good in the essentials, like foreign policy and the economy and stuff like that. I'm like, yeah, but those have changed so much because of technology. You can't parse it like that. It's like
100%.
The fundamental landscape of those things has changed, and Joe Biden doesn't even understand that. Like,
right, exactly.
You know what I mean?
Like, so how could he possibly adjust over the next 4 or 8 years to every new the technology is building quicker and quicker? You have to be able to adapt.
Exactly. And I mean, the subtext when I hear that is that I want somebody that talks about things that I understand.
That's exactly right. Yep.
Yeah. So,
which is an unfortunate way of thinking about things.
Yeah, yeah. That's sad to me. And I think it's partly on us, millennials, younger people too. No. I don't think that the fault of that is on us. What I'm saying is, like, I think it's partly on us, millennials, people younger than us, the younger X, people who engage with technology frequently, to help older people interact with it and use it and realize the value in it. Because I think a lot of the time it's just like, we like to laugh and be like, look, they don't know how to use an iPhone. Ha ha ha. And then they get irritated and they just think technology is this dumb thing. So really difficult thing to do, but I think it's like fundamental that we have to try to do that.
Right. But it's more important to even convince them that it's worthwhile.
It is. I mean, it's a bigger generational gap than I think has ever existed before.
Is there, like, why? I don't understand. What's the point of Twitter?
Yeah.
It's just people sharing thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't understand that, I think, to our age group, that is one of the biggest news sources. Yeah. That's how we interact with politics, sports, you know, reality TV. That's everything.
Yeah, and they say that's not news. That's fragments of information.
Right,
I'm like, but
that's what news is
before,
right.
It gets turned into a narrative that people can consume.
Like, exactly.
A lot of people, when they think of news, what they're actually thinking of is pre-digested narrative that is fed to them.
Yep.
Like,
yep. A story, some kind of...
That's been assembled by random bits of information.
By 100%. By something completely agree with you.
Yeah. this is going to be difficult to get over that and to kind of bridge this. It's not even a generational gap anymore. It's a generational chasm. Because the internet, like, you think about what the internet and that amount of information does, particularly when it shows up at a point in somebody's life where their brain is still elastic, right? Is like, they have all of that exposure at a time where they can still absorb it. And and a lot of wisdom, traditional wisdom, becomes obsolete. Am I right or wrong?
You are.
I mean, think about some of the things that get said, like, hey, I paid for, college by flipping burgers or something like that. I mean, that's not like, hey, that's cool, that's great. Like, is that still relevant wisdom?
No.
And there are plenty of other examples of things like that too, but not all wisdom is obsolete. There's some wisdom that is more timeless, but you really have to parse it. So anyway, that's it with the one last thing with generation. What would you say is the biggest misrepresentation of millennials and of boomers? Like, the most unfair assessment?
Well, this is the obvious answer, but mm-hmm. the kind of general stigma that people our age are entitled, because we want free healthcare, we want free college, and there's an assumption that it's because we don't want to work hard, and that's probably true for some people.
Yeah. You can't disprove that that's
that's not true for some people, but for the majority, it's because, as you were saying, flipping burgers to pay your way through college is not realistic anymore.
Mm-hmm.
The stratification and wealth divide is basically insurmountable if, you know, the status quo remains the same. So yeah, it's we're feeling entitled in the sense that we are trying to change things for the better.
Yeah.
And we believe that we deserve a better America. Mm-hmm. Not that we deserve free shit because we don't want to work hard.
Yeah, I'm with you there. And the thing that I want to convey is that, you know, if you don't want Bernie Sanders, then we need something. We need something that's an alternative to doing nothing. Because the system that we have right now is broken in every possible way. And I think that you can point out to somebody, you could walk in their house and say, hey, by the way, you have infestation of this, and this is, you have rot here, and this is broken. They're like, okay, that might be true, but it's what I know. And the devil you know is better than the devil you don't. So that's a lot of people, I think. They say, you know what, and that's just the people that acknowledge that there actually is a problem after you point it out.
Exactly.
A lot of people would just
outright
bitch you out and say, you know what, get the hell out of my house. Or, like, if you don't like this house, then why don't you move someplace else or go someplace else?
Exactly. Right.
Okay. So, and biggest misconception or unfair with boomers?
That's tough. I'm framing this in my mind as I'm thinking of it.
So, this is
not going to be as articulate as I would like it to be.
Okay.
But I guess the flip side is that, as I was saying, I was already generalizing and saying, like, boomers think we're entitled.
Yeah.
I think that doesn't mean that they're not respectful or generous.
Mm-hmm.
Those two things, I think, are still mostly true.
Yeah.
I think it's just, like you said, the core belief system is built in a different era on facts that are no longer accurate, and it's an inability to... To their credit, it's so hard to break that mold, like we were saying. So, but I, and maybe I'm in the back of my head, I hear the alarm bell saying you're being naive, but because the loudest voices are the ones that you hear the most, right?
Yeah.
There are people that I look at and see, like, you have no empathy.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think generalizing, those traits are still there.
Yeah, I do too.
I don't think most of it for your average person. That's, you know. It's not ill will.
Mm-hmm.
It's not malignant. I want you guys to suffer. It's an inability to see how much everything's evolved.
Yeah. I think that young people, they can have a self-absorption to them, just like anybody, where, like, they won't actually sit down with older people and try to explain it in a non, like, aggressively confrontational, emotional way. So they just do themselves an immense disservice, and it also becomes this self-fulfilling prophecy where older people then look at younger people and, like, well, if you can't even do that, then, like, that's why you're wrong, is because you're just highly emotional and you can't articulate your point. So I think older people are definitely right about younger people in that regard. I think across both generations, there needs to be a realization that most of the time people, unfortunately, instead of trying to go for resolution, they simply go for catharsis. And they stop. They say, you know what, like, I could actually get this person to understand, or I could freak out at them and feel good about it. And, like, 90% of the time, people choose to freak out at them, feel good about it, and maybe potentially get an audience and film it or something like that, right? So, we got to get over that.
Yep.
All right. So, that's it with generations. I know we're now, like, 40 minutes into the program.
Yeah.
And by the way, I said that I would give you the number, and now I'm remembering it's 855-915-9636. This is the in-studio line. Once again, 855-915-9636. If you tuned in late, you're listening to Man V Mob Radio. I'm your host, Patrick Clerkin, and my in-studio guest is Ryan. And okay, we'll do the PSA towards the end. You said you had a couple hot takes, and I was curious if you wanted to dig into those.
I mean, absolutely. I could
okay, because I'm all about hot takes.
So the one that I've been thinking a lot recently, because I will be going to a couple friends' weddings in the upcoming months.
Mm-hmm.
Wedding registries are dumb. They're outdated. They're pointless. They need to die.
Yeah.
Let me lay the groundwork for why I think they were originally a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
Going back to what we were kind of talking about before.
Consume.
Big one, obviously. Yeah. B, there are more people living together before getting married now than there ever have been.
Mm-hmm.
So they've already established a home. They don't need... If you've been living with somebody for a year and a half, you probably have utensils.
Yeah.
You probably have a cutting board and steak knives, I'd assume.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it's also a big holdover from the era where you can't order everything with one touch from Amazon. That's, I think, really what it is.
Yeah.
Is that back in the day, you would actually have to go out and purchase these things yourself.
Oh, absolutely.
So the point of it was to save the bride and groom the trouble of actually going out and doing it.
Yeah, and finding the stuff and locating. Now it's just instantaneous.
Now,
so what
me
are you
making
to me?
The list... If I'm making a wedding registry, mm-hmm. I did 98% of the work already.
Yeah.
All I didn't do is put in my credit card number and my address. Ryan, I basically picked exactly what I want.
I am so with you. Like, I have not thought about this in terms of wedding registries.
Yeah.
But I'm so with you in that we have these relics of previous points in time. Like, I'm thinking of anything requiring gift giving in general, like Christmas or a birthday, where somebody will say, well, why don't you tell me what you want and then I'll get it for you. I'm like, well, why? What, like, why don't I just buy it for myself?
Right.
And cut out the middle man or the middle woman. Like, I don't get why we do this weird stage handling of
gift giving sometimes.
Yeah.
So I think I've made my point.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's really... I think it also encourages, like you said, consumerism and the fact that, well, I'm already on here and might as well get this meat tenderizer that I'm going to use once in 20 years.
Yep.
Because if you have 150 guests mm-hmm. in your wedding, ostensibly you need 150 things for them to buy. You don't need 100... I can't even name 150 things mm-hmm. that you would put on a wedding registry, but... They do.
Well, people feel compelled, so they just start compiling a thing.
Right,
say,
exactly.
Right,
well, so I don't know how
get
to...
Four cheese graters, whatever.
100%. Yeah. So I don't know how to de-stigmatize giving cash as a gift, but just give people goddamn cash as a gift.
Yeah.
And they will be thankful.
Pretty good idea.
So the addendum is what we do need a quote-unquote registry for mm-hmm. is young kids' parties.
Oh, yeah.
I have a,
that's a good
friend
point.
Who's... child is turning one in a week.
Yeah.
They, like you said, can't buy something for themselves
yep.
or even express what they really want in a coherent fashion.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not just one-year-olds. I'd say up to, I don't know, six. They're not
it's
buying.
It's totally true, yeah.
Right. So
yeah,
I understand I'm reinventing the concept of a wish list. I really do.
Well,
this isn't like...
I'm not going to go back and return the kid's gift. Like, once I choose the kid's gift, I'm like, I'm not
right.
so emotionally
so
committed
in this.
So you
end up asking
that,
the parent
like, I don't
anyway.
Care if they got two of these Lego sets. I'm not going to
the
go back and return it.
The parent doesn't want it, right.
Yeah.
But to you, I'm like, I'm whatever.
Yeah, your kid probably doesn't care. Like, you think your kid's so special and smart, they probably won't even realize or care that they have two identical Lego sets. Like,
right, but it's not ideal.
The parent's upset. Yeah, all right, fine, whatever.
But all right, so the infrastructure that already exists again for wedding registries,
yeah.
pivot it. The kid says what they want, or the parent comes up with some ideas over the course of the year.
Mm-hmm.
They jot that down. They put it on this website,
yeah,
kidregistry.com, whatever the hell ever.
Mm-hmm.
Now I don't have to go ask the parent what they think I should get, and they're like, oh, well, his aunt's already buying him a Buzz Lightyear toy, and the other friend's getting a Lego set, so I have enough clothes. You know what I mean? You're putting them under the spot. They have to make the decision for you anyway.
You know what you should
this
do?
This is a better system.
As a protest, is you should just get him a Fortnite subscription. And then
for
watch,
the one-year-old?
Yeah, and then watch, or whatever. Not the one-year-old. But,
yeah, that'll go over really well.
But for a younger kid, and then just see the parents have to...
That is what the kid would want.
To take it away. I know it is.
Yeah.
And then be like, exactly. All right, well, I got them what they wanted.
Yeah, exactly.
Now you have to take it away.
Great idea. Great idea. That's a great way to endanger your friendship with everybody.
Exactly.
To make a statement.
Fortnite subscription to... Yeah. I mean, yeah. It's just every kid, same thing. Easy. Writes itself.
Next year's the same thing. Don't worry about it. Yeah. It's certainly easy on my end. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I'm glad you were very receptive.
Full agreement on that.
Yeah. Yep. Fantastic.
Oh, one wedding registration that I thought was kind of cool is it was my cousin's last year, and there were some... They put in an extra effort to add some interesting things. Like, they were getting a car restored. It was like an old car, and they're like, hey, if you want to chip in money for the paint job for this, or if you want to donate money to, it was like some charity or something like that. So there were some cool elements
on
it.
So it wasn't straight cash, but you were essentially...
Yeah, like there was more, oh, okay, this is interesting. This isn't just like, you know, a gravy boat.
You say that, but it's real.
Yeah, I know.
Not even remotely hypothetical.
Bread maker.
Yeah. The meat tenderizer was also real, for the record.
Mean like the hammer with the spikes on it?
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Except,
yeah.
All right. Next thought, Jake.
I'm trying to remember now. That was the one that, again, that's been, you know, really present on my mind. I'm sort of stealing this one from a podcast I listened to.
That's okay.
But I don't know if this is strictly legal, and I think that's why it's a take.
Mm-hmm.
There should be a child-free airline.
Wow.
Yeah.
That would be really cool.
There's a market for it.
Yep.
There would be demand. I don't see a scenario where this would, you know, end up being a bad financial decision on the, but I don't care. Pick Southwest, whatever. No free ads for Southwest. They're the first one off the top of my head.
Would there be a partner child-only airline? Because that could be really bad.
Well, that's the point. I don't think anybody would do that. Right.
Like all the kids in a giant pen or like little carriers.
Yes.
Just stacked.
Yes. Yeah, I don't like flying with. The other thing is then you have to determine what the cutoff is.
Mm-hmm.
That's, I don't know, somebody with, you know, some actual data can figure out. Do some market research. Find out at what the like pivot point is where people still think it makes sense.
Yeah.
I don't know. Let's say 8.
Mm-hmm.
If your kid's below 8, you can't come on this airline.
8 seems fair.
I think that might be your stream did Uh-oh. Something. Oh, no, it's good. It black screened for a second.
Hey, Ben said
Oh, you got
something.
Some comments. sure.
First of all, I'm going to wave to Vlad and to Sarah. So,
what up, Vlad and Sarah?
And then Ben said, do you think our generation wants our voices heard more? Voting, gun control, women's rights more than generations of the past? Or do we just have the outlets, Twitter, Facebook, to do it?
What a sidetrack.
Yeah.
From me ranting about child airplanes.
I apologize. Yeah. We left the generations topic. I know you did that a long time ago. This is why I hate having this this live stream over on the side here. There's no,
right.
I need
no
to figure out a better
consistently
way
to interact with it.
Yeah.
There's got to be a way to push that feed to the computer.
I'm sure that I can make it work. It's just every time that I have like an hour slot of time that I have to rapidly set everything up.
You got 3 minutes to actually.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Okay. Before we go back to the hot takes and the childless airline, what do you think?
I'm just reviewing what the actual question is. The question was, read it one more time.
Okay.
I remember option B was, do we just have the avenues to express
Ben,
it more?
Ben says, he says, you gotta look. Yep, I know, I do look. So I apologize. All right, it's, do you think our generation wants our voices heard more, voting, gun control, women's rights, more than generations of the past? Or do we just
have the
means, the outlets with social
this
media?
This is such a cheap answer, but I think they're like inherently intertwined.
Okay.
You send a tweet or you do something about a cause that you care about, and there's going to be interaction, good or bad, which will encourage you to continue doing that. You know what I mean? It's that kind of like reinforcement and like enabling people to say what they want. So it's one and the same.
Yeah. Well, you have social feedback mechanisms.
Right. Because we have social feedback mechanisms, we can say things that we believe in, and then we're encouraged to keep doing so. And the reason that can happen is because the avenues to communicate them to people that we've never met in our lives are as easy as pulling out my phone and spending 10 seconds.
This is the danger of, this is such a cliched conversation, but the danger, one of the dangers of social media in the sense of, it's just this, in phones in general, really, just this black box where somebody from the outside just says, this person's using it for stupid, dumb, useless ends. They're playing Candy Crush or they're just whatever. And there's so many things that can be done. There's such versatility to all these different tools. Like this thing in our hands is literally a Swiss Army knife, a modern equivalent of a Swiss Army knife. And it's also something like, it's the first time in history that we are actually cyborgs. We're the first step in a series. I'm not joking.
Isn't the definition like if you have a pacemaker, you're technically a cyborg? Because you have like machinery controlling a vital organ?
Maybe. I mean, I don't think
that's the point you were making, but yeah, for the record.
It's not implanted within us yet, and it's not in our brain. But my point is that our brains interface with technology so well that we are highly adaptable in this realm of dealing with technology, and we don't really get...
It's like an intrinsic part of our day-to-day experience.
It's almost like our hand in the sense of when we lose it, like people get extremely anxious and panic. And but the danger is people are doing really, really awesome, freaking incredible things with their phone and with this connectedness through social media.
Yeah,
but it just gets diminished to
easier,
like, hey, they just do stupid little social media squabbles and they take pictures of their food.
Those are fun too, though.
No, I'm not saying these aren't fun, but it's like it just gets diminished to that. It gets diminished to like the most convenient caricature of what the thing is.
Yeah, it's a reductive sort of viewpoint.
Yeah. Any tool gets reduced to its the worst way that people use it.
Yeah, yep. Of course.
Okay, so... How was that, Ben? Did you answer your question? He'll answer eventually. He says President's Day gets moved to the Monday after the Super Bowl. It's on the same Monday every year. It's not always on a president's birthday. Hot take. That was his hot take. Do you want me to read that again?
Move it to voting day.
All over
my lap. I'm sure there's worse. He could have thrown up on me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying this is the worst scenario, but then I was like, this sucks.
Yep.
And there's you can't clean your entire pants up on a flight. I was basically just sitting there with red sauce in my lap.
With a bloody lap.
Yeah, and I was like, well, okay, this is my life for the next 6 or 13 hours, however long it was.
Yep. Okay, that is a bad scenario.
Yeah. It's not the end of the world, but would I have paid $40 for the clear conscience of this probably won't happen? Because it's...
Think of me as Robin Williams from Good Will Hunting. It's not your fault.
It's not.
All right. It's not your fault.
You're right.
All right. So you don't have to really push to come up with other hot takes and remember them. Let's spend the last portion of the show talking about movies and things that you're excited about that are coming out that you have seen.
Well, as you mentioned, we did the podcast episode where I shared my 10 favorite albums, 10 favorite movies.
From the 2010s.
Yep. So that was... I don't remember. I want to say October. It was late in the year. There wasn't a lot of room to make additions or subtractions or addendums. That being said, like 3 weeks after that, I saw Parasite, and Parasite is on the list.
Yep.
If you ask me what I have to bump,
definitely see it.
I don't know which one I would bump off the top of my head, but it's 100% on there. Maybe Burning, which is ironic because they're both Korean movies, right?
Yeah.
I don't actually even remember what the other 10 were off the top of my head.
Okay.
We don't need to relitigate those.
But I need to see Parasite, though, because that's...
It touches on a lot of what we've been discussing, the class stratification. It's somehow... I'm going to see it for a second time, probably this weekend, actually. And I have another theory.
I might... If you're seeing it nearby and I could hop on to that, I would love to go see it.
We will chat.
Okay.
We will chat. It's still playing in Davis.
Okay.
At Somerville Theater.
Hmm.
No free ads. So
maybe I can get them as a sponsor, Somerville Theater.
There you go. Technically, are we in Medford right now?
Yeah, but I mean, I don't think there's hate.
I was just curious.
Yeah. Maybe I'm going to get a dispensary, maybe, and then the Somerville Theater,
nice.
And then that would be this could be good.
I broke my train of thought here.
Parasite.
So my theory. Obviously, it's in Korean. Obviously, there's subtitles.
Mm-hmm.
In the past, and I think especially with non-foreign films, like if you go on Netflix and you pop the closed captions on, I don't know if you have friends that insist on doing that. It's super frustrating to me. It ruins most of the comedic timing. You almost always read the joke before you've heard it, and obviously the delivery is half of every joke.
I don't think I have friends that would watch a movie with subtitles in it willingly in general.
I have more than one friend that insists on it.
Yeah that's bad.
I don't think it's because they're particularly hard of hearing. That's just like the way that it's super, super annoying.
Hmm. Yeah, closed captioning in general, unless it's absolutely necessary, pretty much annoys me.
So the point that I was going to make, and I really want to pay attention to this the second time, is I think I don't know if it's like not the norm, but I think they really paid attention to how they were putting the closed captions up to perfectly actually align with the dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
So the facial expressions of the actor, even though I don't speak Korean, I don't know a word of, I know like five words in Korean. I can go to a restaurant and order, you know, whatever.
Pinsamnida.
Yeah. Oh, very nice. Applause to that. So the point I was making is that it's still, you could tell by their, you know, how their face is moving, mm-hmm. the actors' interaction with one another. I think they like cut the dialogue and the flashing of the subtitles on the screen to like align better than your average movie. Because I found it super funny. I really did. I was really impressed with how funny it managed to be with not being in English.
Wow, you have a phenomenal ability to notice things like that. I think I would I would have to watch something 20 times. And
right,
I still
right. So that's why
it.
It's a theory that I think I came up with, not even like towards the end of the movie or leaving it. And I want to like make sure to pay attention to it on the review when I'm not as focused on and I know what's going to happen and I'm not hyper focused on that.
That's I really have to see this movie. And by the way, if you want to see this movie and then go get Korean food, I'm down for that too. There's a Korean place right down the street in Medford. If you live local in Medford, people listening, there's a great Korean place nearby, and you got to check that out. Unfortunately, I don't know the name of it off the top of my head, but it's right over near like the Chicken and Rice Guys, and the Is it a Mike's Pastry or Modern Pastry? I think it's a Modern Pastry right there in Medford, and near the hockey store. So
the hockey store. Nice.
The quick movie references that I wanted to say are I recently rewatched Inception. Thought it was so much better the second time. Like 10 years. It was like 10 years later though. I don't know what you think about it. But
I have
like,
a lot of thoughts, actually, I just think in three minutes and 10 seconds.
We still have to do the PSA, too. I was just going to say that it really connects to me, or it really connects for me, I should say, how Chris Nolan movies always touch on time and how time moves
So really quickly, I love that movie.
Yeah.
It's super flawed.
Yep.
And I actually think it, maybe because it was so fresh, I've probably seen that movie like 7 times. I really have. I think it's one of the ones where you notice the cracks in the seams more and more every time you watch it.
Okay. Like the kicks and things like that. And
I'm not even talking about plot holes.
Oh, okay.
I'm talking about like fundamental...
Character things. Oh,
so,
yeah.
Wow, I'm blanking on her name.
Mal? Mal?
No. Well...
Ellen Page's character?
Ellen Page, thank you. Yeah. It's like Ariadne or something.
Yeah.
First of all, yep. The naming of everybody in that movie has the subtlety of a drunk gorilla.
Nothing's as bad as the book Brave New World, if you've ever read that. It's the same thing where it's like Benito Marx or something like that, and you're like, okay.
Yeah, I wonder who this is a reference to. No, right. So you're right. The point I was trying to make, though, was Ariadne. She's supposed to be the audience surrogate, right? Mm-hmm. She's the outsider that's coming in. They're explaining the world to her. You learn all the rules through her eyes.
Yeah.
Right? The weird thing is, normally in a movie that ends a third of the way through, because you understand the rules, you understand the stakes, she's asking questions with 2 minutes left in the runtime. We're there.
Yeah, we're probably going to have to quickly do the PSA.
Me?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Read this one.
All right. So we're going to read the ladder safety PSA here. There's something very dangerous in your home. It could be hiding in a closet or waiting in the basement. It's not sharp or toxic or flammable, yet it helps send...
It's a ladder.
Spoilers. You cut me off about 12 words before that. Using a ladder might seem easy, but misusing one is even easier.
Mm-hmm.
Ask any of the 150,000 people who fell off their ladders into the trauma center last year alone. Don't let a do-it-yourself project do yourself in. For tips on ladder safety, visit orthoinfo.org/ladder safety.
Awesome job, Ryan.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming on. You're invited
inspired.
On anytime. And the last thing I wanted to say is people listening... you can also find Man V Mob Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and manvmobpodcast.com and Stitcher. I don't know who listens to Stitcher, but if you're one of those people...
I don't know a single person that uses Stitcher, for the record.
You can listen to it there, too. The
talk
other thing I wanted to bring
groups.
Up, we'll talk about it next time, is American Crime Story is going to have another season. It's going to be about the Lewinsky scandal, so I'm pretty pumped about that. But anyway,
all right. Tabled
to
be continued.
Yeah, tabled until next time.
All right, so, thanks again, Pat, for having me on.
Of course, Ryan. Thanks.